Welcome back on this Wednesday hump day, the sixth day of March 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall. It's also the day after Super Tuesday, where basically there were no surprises. As expected, Trump trounced Nikki Haley in every state except for perhaps a tiny surprise in the leftist stronghold of Vermont, which allows majority Democrats and independents to vote in whichever primary they'd like. Or people who don't like voting for a senile socialist decided, hey, we've got an option. We can vote for the warmonger from the rhino side of the party. And a lot of them seem to have done that. So Haley eked out a very narrow win over Trump in that singular state, becoming the only state that she's actually won this entire primary season. And at least initially, that seemed to be enough to keep Never Trumper hope alive among the rhino set. But by late Wednesday morning, ABC News at least was reporting that Haley announced she's suspending her presidential campaign, but still refuses to endorse Donald Trump. She did, they note, acknowledge in brief remarks that Donald Trump is all but certain now to be the GOP nominee after the convention in July, subject to any of the obvious caveats that the left and deep state are clearly still working on. But that at least gave ABC News a chance to chortle in a related headline, where will Haley's anti-Trump supporters go, as sources say she's ending her campaign. Said one voter, responding to the obvious, quote, as bad as Biden is, at least we know where he's going. Ponder that. Worse still, we know where the once free country's going, and fast. In spite of the one-sided trouncing, though, ABC continues to persist in claiming that it was a messy primary and adds, get this, that as the Biden Fuhrer, quote, gears up for a likely rematch with Trump, his campaign believes there are opportunities in that apparent weakness. I think they mean the voting machines and the fact that nothing's been changed when it comes to vote early, vote often, and don't worry, you'll never get caught. Particularly, they note, in the suburbs, in the battleground states, where Trump also suffered losses in 2020. In other words, we still got them in our pocket, and no way he can win if we get to count the votes. On the communist side of the Super Tuesday slate, the Daily Mail prattles that Joe Biden won all 15 states easily on Super Tuesday over rivals that nobody's ever even heard of. But, and this was a concern, there was a lot of support for uncommitted in a number of Super Tuesday states, with early returns showing 10% of registered socialists in Massachusetts voting that way, 10% in North Carolina as well, and almost 20% in Minnesota. In other words, anybody but Joe. And it's interesting, they don't talk about the vote totals much in Vermont. I suspect that there were a whole lot of people that either stayed home or decided, if I'm going to vote, I might as well vote for that other Democrat pretending to be a Republican. They both still obviously want to destroy the world, but she's nowhere near as old or as senile. What's also interesting when you peruse the Daily Mail headlines is this one about bumbling Joe Biden, their term, who froze for 15 seconds and again told the press that he might just get in trouble if he actually took questions because no telling what he would say and everybody knows it. The Biden marionette, they say, quote, sparked more concerns about his health with a long 1,000-yard stare after joking he would, quote, get in trouble if he took any questions from media members. And it says the fake president was wrapping up the launch of a task force to, lower the cost of living, at least if you're an illegal alien, when he refused to answer any questions from the White House press corps. He then put the microphone down and froze like a deer in the headlights, staring aimlessly into nowhere for about 15 seconds as reporters shouted questions at the doddering old man. The nursing home escapee then muttered something inaudible as everyone left the room. And the Daily Mail's coverage wrapped up with more videos of the senile old guy bumping into walls, talking to nowhere, and stumbling off the stages. And, of course, no surprise here, asked kind of obliquely about the fake president's undeniable and worsening dementia, the White House official spokeslayer chastened the reporter for daring to say such a thing and, of course, denied that they have any knowledge of anything that's not perfectly brilliant about the most intelligent man ever to take so many blatant bribes and then still be installed as president. And that was followed up by Karine Jean-Pierre with a bit of a Clintonian truth. She said, quote, he's done more in the past 3 years than most presidents who had two terms, unquote. And that's correct, folks, but only if your yardstick is destroying what's left of the Constitutional Republic. Turning next to economics and finance to buttress that case, we'll start first with the rigged paper gold markets, which are still up in spite of that rigging. Extending their run of the last few days, says Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, spot gold prices have just exceeded their all-time highs, topping $2,140 for an ounce, albeit still a paper ounce, for the first time in history. And they quote analyst Luke Grohman, who at least gets partial credit for writing, "When gold rises in your own currency despite positive real rates, the gold market is saying your government will have a debt spiral if real rates remain positive." Unquote. Now, the problem with that comment, folks, is that he's relying on Big Brother's own statistics to claim that real rates are positive. If you look at real inflation in real terms, turns out that real rates have been negative for quite a while. In other words, at current bond rates, anybody that claims that they're investing sick in a bond is actually losing money relative to inflation, even if Big Brother will try to tell you otherwise. So, the old saying that gold pays no interest looks really good by comparison, because zero is clearly better than negative. And as Egon von Graertz notes in his latest missive, we have liftoff and you can expect more to come. We'll come back to that in just a second, but first a couple of other related stories having to do with cyber attacks, outages, and things you might expect as the meltdown persists. Coinbase, as a piece from the Daily Mail, has again admitted an outage as customers cannot buy and sell Bitcoin on the day that it hits another record high. Problems were linked, or at least that was the claim, to heavy trading as Bitcoin surged to a record high and then dipped. The company said on X, "We're aware that some users may be experiencing errors when at least attempting to transact. But fear not, don't worry, your assets are safe, at least as safe as they can be in a fully digital asset with no real intrinsic value, which, as it turns out, you may or may not be able to trade or use when you'd really like to." One Coinbase customer wrote to the company, again on X, "You're a disaster. You can't explain how you're not prepared for high traffic. The cost of missing these dips should be your responsibility." Moving on to other outages, the same source says that two Facebook, Messenger, Instagram are all back online following an hour-and-a-half outage that left users worldwide unable to access things like Meta's socialist media platforms. Experts say that a cyber attack, though, can never be fully ruled out. And isn't that interesting? It's as close as they get to admitting, we're getting attacked here and we can't quite stop it. So, put a bit differently, that's as close as they'll ever get to an admission that they're probably not going to report on anyway. Said the story, angry users found themselves booted out of their accounts, making them think they'd been hacked and their personal details stolen. The issues appeared around 10:20 a.m. Eastern time and impacted both apps and websites. And this is dated late Wednesday afternoon, Eastern time. And along with the U.S., they say the outage reached the U.K., parts of Europe, China, Australia, and Mexico, leading to a price decline in Meta's stock. While users flooded to X, the service formerly known as Twitter, to complain about the outage and share their memes to the delight of owner Elon Musk. In his latest analysis of the U.S. economic situation and of alternatives looking forward, Egon von Graertz noted we have liftoff when it comes to the precious metals alternative, and he began again this week with a brief review of history, noting that back in 2008, the U.S. financial system was just minutes from imploding, with banks like J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, and others bankrupt. But, praise the almighty Fed, virtually unlimited money printing postponed that collapse, kicking the can down the road yet again. And since 2008, notes von Graertz, U.S. total debt has doubled to $100 trillion, and that doesn't count unfunded liabilities, folks. So, he notes, hearkening back to the late 1960s, Tricky Dick Nixon couldn't make ends meet then, and in 1971, Nixon closed the so-called gold window, starting the most spectacular bonfire yet of U.S. government budget books. No more accountability, no more shackles, no more gold deliveries to people like De Gaulle in France, who was clever enough to ask for gold instead of fiat bucks in debt settlement from the U.S. So, since August of 71, the U.S. has embarked on a money printing and credit expansion bonanza never seen before in world history. Total U.S. debt went from $2 trillion back then to $200 trillion today, up over 100-fold. And since most major countries were linked to the dollar under the Bretton Woods system, the closing of the gold window started a global free-for-all with printing presses, including bank credit, replacing real money, i.e. gold and silver, worldwide. And here's the key. The consequences of this so-called temporary move, and remember, that's what Nixon called it at the time, is that all fiat or paper money since has declined by 97 to 99% since 1971. In other words, a fiat buck today is worth what two or three pennies were back then. And they were real copper besides. and the price of assets has inflated correspondingly. In 1971, total U.S. financial assets amounted to $2 trillion. Today, they're $130 trillion, up 65 times or so. And if we include off-balance sheet assets, including the shadow banking system, derivatives, and assets which will become liabilities, it amounts to an excess of $2 quadrillion. So as he puts it, the bottom line is, heads gold wins, tails gold wins. And again, returning to Lou Grumman and his tree rings report, he puts forward two options for the world economy, which can be summarized as follows. Number one, de-dollarization continues, the petrodollar dies, and gold gradually replaces the dollar as a global commodity trading currency, especially in the commodity-rich BRICS countries, which will allow commodity prices, things like oil and foods, to stay low as gold rises and drives a virtuous circle of global trade. But if the above option sounds too good to be true, bear in mind the bankrupt status of the global financial system. Luke posits a much less pleasant outcome, number two, and says Egon von Graerts, in my view, this alternative outcome is sadly much more likely. Number two, China, the U.S. Treasury market, and the global economy implode spectacularly, sending the world into a new Great Depression with political instability, possibly or maybe even probably World War III, in which case gold probably rises spectacularly all the same, while bonds and then equities scramble for one of the only assets with no counterparty risk, i.e. gold. Although there are a very few other assets, like primarily silver and to a lesser extent Bitcoin, to share that distinction. And as Egon notes, Bitcoin could go to $1 million, as I've often said, but it could also go to zero if it's banned or if the grid goes down. It's too binary for me, and probably not a good wealth preservation risk in any case. After some more analysis, Egon von Graerts notes that here we have gold that's broken out, but very few investors are actually participating. So this stealth move in gold has left virtually every investor behind, as he shows in a table that lists some of the following, well, interesting facts. Since the first quarter of 2022, funds and ETFs have liquidated about 30% of their gold holdings, and while gold bottomed in October 2022, those funds continued to sell gold, and he notes that selling from 1970 all the way down to 1650 probably isn't the best recommendation to your clients, but continued selling as the price has gone from 1650 up to 2115 and now 40 is sheer incompetence. Meaning that the clever buyers at this time are the BRICS central banks, because almost all of their purchases are off market. So it means in the short term, they have only a marginal effect on gold price. But now that the squeeze has started, as my good friend Alistair McLeod explains, he points out so well on King World News, the COMEX was never meant for physical deliveries. It's about selling futures and paper, and only for cash settlements. But now, buyers are standing for physical delivery. We've seen last month major exports of gold from the U.S. to Switzerland, either 400-ounce COMEX bars or U.S. government bars sold and leased and sent to Swiss refiners, which are then broken down into 1-kilogram bars for onwards export to, guess where, the BRICS, which will never again return, even if they're only leased and not sold. And that process, he says, will one day bring panic to the gold markets, as there will be nowhere near enough physical gold for all the paper claims. Now, that is already true, folks. There is a huge ratio, something on the order of 100 to 1, give or take, and it varies dramatically from month to month, but still a huge number of gold contracts that can never be met with actual physical gold because they're all paper claims. So, for any gold investors, he says, who don't hold physical gold in a safe jurisdiction, and he doesn't think that the USA qualifies as one, given the communist overlords, I suggest they quickly move their gold to a private vault where they have personal access. That is, if they can leave the country, someplace like Singapore or Switzerland. And for crying out loud, don't invest in fractional gold ownership, gold ETFs or funds, and don't even think about putting your gold in a so-called bank. At least, not if you'd like to still have it once the squeeze starts. And interestingly, if you compare gold to the monetary base, as he does in some charts, it looks like gold at this time, as it was back in early 2021, is just about as cheap on a ratio basis as it was all the way back in 1971 when Tricky Dick closed the gold window at $35 an ounce, and all the way back in 2000 when it was at $300 relative to the total money supply. So as he suggested, and certainly not for the first time, get it while you can. Because unlike paper, folks, they simply can't print it to infinity. From there, let's move on to something else that the waste stream would just as soon you pay no attention to that man behind the curtain about. What's happened to Texas since they decided they didn't like being invaded, and the governor and the attorney general there and others decided to, say no and do something about it, as it turns out, with the support of quite a few other governors as well, who also don't like the fact that the U.S. is being invaded by communist Chinese MS-13 and various Islamic terrorist militants. Among others. Lots and lots of others. First, the Biden Fuhrer had his puppet strings pulled, and a new executive order affecting exports of liquefied natural gas from the state, clearly intended to hammer the state's economy, was announced. That was followed by fire. Lots and lots of fire. As it turned out, the biggest wildfire, still over 1 million acres, and still only not even remotely under control. The smokehouse fire, as it's being called, has literally destroyed one of the most productive cattle ranching areas in the entire United States. And on top of all the other fires that we've seen, basically gut and destroy large swaths of the nation's food supply, you gotta say, isn't that another amazing coincidence? InfoWars' Harrison Smith put it this way.
And now you just happen to have a massive wildfire spring up out of nowhere in Texas that kills a, quote, staggering amount of livestock and destroys the grazing land of 80% of Texas's cattle. So, ooh, a little bit coincidental there.
So the state that's leading the pushback to the Biden-Fuhrer regime and the illegal invasion of the United States has suddenly seen about 80% of its entire cattle grazing destroyed. Oh, no, these are not the droids you're looking for, and pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, for sure. Wonder what the impact might be on the U.S. food supply from that. Well, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, too, has weighed in on some of the amazing coincidences and unusual things that they've been observing around this wildfire. Watching the press conference, a lot of folks wrote things like, makes you wonder if there was a directed energy weapon employed here. And, oh yeah, don't forget, these wildfires happen in the exact location where 80 or 90% of all the cattle in Texas just happen to have, well, at least once, fed. And if you want to kill people and break things, there's obviously more than one way to start a fire. Maybe lots of ways to start fires in lots of different places even. Oh, gee, and is it really cynical of your host to think, especially if you won't let those folks cut the razor wire at the border, right? What else are they going to do? Here's what Governor Abbott himself said.
I have witnessed and observed some extraordinary damage in our state. It could be caused by hurricanes or tornadoes, and frequently when you see the aftermath of that damage, there's some semblance of a structure that is still there. When you look at the damages that have occurred here, it's just gone. Completely gone. Nothing left but ashes on the ground. Some early, and I will categorize as premature assessments, show that there are about 400 to 500 structures that have been destroyed. There's no way to say for certainty that's going to be the final number, because there's still the ongoing assessment process.
And furthermore, folks, as I record this segment, that wildfire is still out of control. Next, we'll peruse the battleground of individual rights versus the almighty state. First, a bit of good news, courtesy of Utah and their state legislature. House Bill 119 has been passed and sent to the governor's desk to fund programs to train teachers to defend their own classrooms against, well, whatever kind of nutcases Big Brother's policies may send their way. Certainly might be less of them, your host can't help but think, as does anybody that's actually looked at the statistics, if they weren't gun-free killing zones. Governor Spencer Cox, who probably, it seems, would sign the legislation, supports arming and training school staff so they can, quote, respond very quickly if the worst does happen. The bill received final approval last week when the Republican-controlled House sent it to the governor's desk. And the intent is to incentivize teachers to carry guns and train them to use them in a school shooter scenario, which may end up shortly being a lot less likely, at least in the state of Utah. Let's wrap up today appropriately with a recent piece by Martin Armstrong, who's probably one of the best cycles and economic analysts out there, with an Austrian bent to boot. It comes via the Burning platform, and it's called The CBDC Crisis of 2025. And undoubtedly, begins Martin Armstrong, this entire scheme of digital currencies will be the death of Western civilization. I guess he cuts right to the chase, too. The Founding Fathers prohibited direct taxation, which was repealed during the Marxist movement towards creating the income tax. We're talking 1913, if you recall. Once the income tax was imposed and Big Brother put in place the enforcement arm, the Federal Reserve, The government then needed to know everything you did, which is why the Founding Fathers prohibited any form of direct taxation. Now, even a journalist, if he fails to comply with the demands of Big Brother, is targeted by the IRS. This allows them to go after anyone, unless you're the son of a senile president, who in fact does as he's told, in order to keep being the son of a senile president. So yes, says Martin Armstrong, this will be the worst currency crisis in human history, and it will be the final nail in the coffin of freedom. So again, Martin Armstrong is coming right out and saying it. He includes an article from decades ago about how repudiation of the Czechoslovakian currency stunned the Czech populace in the Soviet-dominated state. The Prague government, it said, announced Saturday sweeping monetary reforms and abandoned its old currency system, establishing a new Czech crown based on the Russian ruble. And it declared all state loans and securities issued since 1945, at the time, to be worthless. Back to the piece. This will most likely, says Martin Armstrong, cancel all currencies after the 2024 U.S. election, or whatever they call it. It'll need to be coordinated, he said, and don't worry, they've been planning on it for a long time, to prevent capital flight. Whatever's in bank accounts or brokerage accounts will be re-denominated in the new digital currency. And the IMF, as you might guess, is pushing hard to replace the dollar with its own version. The likelihood of the collapse of the IMF and world institutions will probably arrive, suggests Martin Armstrong, and his computer models, in 2031. Big tech will, of course, comply. They know where their bread is buttered. They're already stripping us of our freedom of speech. This will become imperative to oppress all freedom in the hopes that they can establish this new totalitarian state, which is the dream of Klaus Schwab and his band of merry thieves at the World Economic Forum. So you can expect the internet, and it's already being done, to be highly monitored and restricted. The point of investments post-2024 will be to hold on, suggests Armstrong, to tangible assets, things that are real, because those, he says, will make this transition from one currency to the next. And as far as bail-ins being applied to people's brokerage accounts, yep, the answer is yes. That was already done by Judge Martin Glenn, who presided over MF Global's bankruptcy and created the first bail-in without congressional authority. He was the first one, the piece notes, to engage in forced loans by abandoning the rule of law to help the banksters and protect Corzini from losses by taking client accounts to cover MF Global's losses. This, says Armstrong, is no different from what we saw in Cyprus. Remember the bail-ins there years ago. He simply allowed the confiscation of client funds when, in fact, the rule of law should have been that the banksters were responsible and MF Global's losses, and it should have been reversed. Never should the client's funds be taken for MF Global's losses to the New York banksters. And he didn't spell it right, but he's trying to be as polite as possible, I suspect. Anyway, says Armstrong, you will have no opt-out avenue. That is the intent, folks. Taxes and commerce will all be digital, which is why they're pushing 5G in order to create instant transfers and enable them to replace any and all cash transactions. Armstrong won't say it because he has a slightly different bailiwick. I will. You know what it is. It's the mark of the beast. Regarding inheritance, the left is already set to push behind the curtain that upon death, everything should belong to the state, which is, of course, one of the Communist Manifesto planks. I fear this will only unleash civil war, says Martin. Nevertheless, there's a crazy leftist in Australia proposing exactly that. It's unfair for one person to have large wealth and another nothing. Consider, he says, therefore, putting all your assets and accounts in one's children's names now to avoid this possible scenario, at least as far as it can be avoided, because otherwise it carries tremendous risk. It all depends, he notes, on your country. When I bought a house 30 years ago, I simply added my children's names. Today you can't do that, and it becomes taxable to them. So while we can't rule out, he says, tactical nuclear weapons, the risk of an EMP attack, too, will be devastating. That would wipe out the economy and take down the Internet. Your host would note, so would a cyber attack that accomplishes the same thing. And it looks almost inevitable to me, folks, that eventually they're going to want to bring down the power grid, at least so far as the peons are concerned. The prospect, says Armstrong, of whatever you have in an account, well, it could simply vanish. And that's one primary reason, he says, I'm against the whole crypto CBDC or central bank digital currency agenda. Because in times of war, an EMP could devastate an adversary. And I think, he says, this simply warns that you should have, and this is not news either, but your host has been talking about it for as long as I've been doing radio, some old silver coins. In the U.S., those would be the kind that predate the fateful year where U.S. coinage essentially ended, 1965. certainly beats the mark of the beast, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.